All right, so I'll hand it over to you, Dr. Fox.
Thank you. Tēnā koutou, ko taki timo te maunga, ko waihopai te awa, ko Aaron taku ingoa. Thank you for reconvening this morning to hear what Joe and I have to say. For my part, I'll speak on scope, predetermination, engagement, and some of the effects and conditions. But I would like to start by thanking Kath Oliver and Craig Aukram for the support which they've provided to submitters during the notice of requirement process. They have both certainly helped to ensure that Bunnythorpe submissions have been heard. So thank you. I'm now going to ask for their help if I had a PowerPoint presentation, if that's able to be uploaded, please, and shared with the panel. I'd be most appreciative, please. While that comes up, there we go. All four of my family live here at number 10, Kairanga, Bunnythorpe Road. Joe and I bought the property in 2018. We were attracted by the potential of the land. We've got 5 acres here with the remains of an old orchard. We've got the proximity to Palmerston North. We have a very large house there, five bedrooms or more, garaging, and the beautiful, peaceful beauty of the neighbourhood. We'd be hard-pressed to find a similar gem in or around the city. We're only about 5 minutes out from town. Bunnythorpe for us has lived up to the Palmerston North City Council's vision, with every resident able to enjoy the benefits of living in a small city matched with the advantages of being in a big city. Just like a number of other Bunnythorpe submitters, we plan to stay here for good. We've moved between islands and towns on average every 3 years since our eldest boy was born, and in 2018 we promised our two lads that we would not move again. But what we did do was complete our due diligence, noting the substation, the railway line, and brief mentions of plans for a transport road. In March 2018, we found out nothing about KiwiRail, freight hubs, and Bunnythorpe. Next slide, please. How do we get that going? Oh, if you could push the button, please.
Yeah, I don't know how that...
Our little clicker here is not going. Thank you. Well, let's tinker. I imagine you want to know about noise. It's a quiet neighbourhood for us, apart from a passing heavy truck or the early morning freight train, and that thing can be very loud at two or three in the morning. Our background noise includes chainsaws, lawn mowers, especially during the weekend, and the occasional Spitfire overflight from a Harkier. But when I wrote this on a sunny Sunday morning, the background noise was simply bird calls. Our house is a concrete bungalow with a floating ground floor built a century ago, and thus we feel the vibrations from heavy truck and trailer units or heavy freight trains. With the original wooden windows and thick concrete walls, ours is not the sort of house which would lend itself to acoustic treatment. It was never designed nor built with a freight hub in mind. Next slide, please. I believe that the freight hub will come close to the pylon, which you can see in the image. It's actually, if you go to the fence, to the middle post on the fence, and then look at the neighbour's garage door, above that you'll see a pylon just in the distance. That's getting up towards Maple Street. So as far as we know, that's sort of where the freight hub will come close to our property. It might be a kilometre or a kilometre and a half away. It's hard to tell from the plans, and we're either affected by noise or not. That depends on which version of a KiwiRail plan we've looked at. I note too that our neighbours here have got a Defence Force doctor over the road, police officer and childcare manager behind us, managers of wholesale or franchise operations on either side of us. We both work at Massey University. Not one of us fits the KiwiRail social impact analysis profile for Bunnythorpe of a potential freight hub employee. I have never driven a forklift in my life. Slide 4, please. Jack's Creek, which you can see to the right here, is a tributary of the Mangaoni Creek or stream. We've worked to improve the health of this creek. We've improved the flow, removed debris and weeds. In the creek, I've observed short fin eels and native fish, bullies. And elsewhere on the property, we have mallard, paradise ducks, fantails, wood pigeons, tuis, bellbirds, kingfishers, welcome swallows, they've just arrived with the season, hawks, pukeko, wetter, tunnel web spiders, butterflies, tree frogs, the possums, the rabbits and the stoats we could do without. It's a delightful environment, and the birdsong is beautiful, especially on the long summer evenings. You cannot appreciate the ecosystem here by sampling a paddock for a day. You have to live here for a year, or better still, a lifetime, to appreciate the wildlife, understand the natural cycles and changes, and love it all the more. Slide five, please. The village was even home to a significant orchard operation, some 10 acres of fruit trees owned by the Gollop family. That land, you can see in the centre of this aerial shot from 1947, that land is now divided into three properties. Ours is the one in the middle. You can see it's a large operation for its time. And the climate here and the ground, the soil, means that it is highly productive land. Grass and everything more grows all year round. I mention this point as here we have highly productive land on the very outskirts of Palmerston North. And I understand there's a draft national policy statement on such land close to the city. Just looking a little further south, you'll see Maple Street down the bottom there with the cemetery. And you'll note that since this photo was taken, a lot of housing has gone into Bunnythorpe.
What's the age of that photo?
About 1947, I believe.
Hmm. So that's before the substation is constructed.
The substation is further to the right. It went in about 1924 originally for the right. Mangahau power station. So the substation is further to the right.
Hmm.
And in the centre there, to the right of the railway line, is the Glaxo factory. That's sort of at the bottom of the photo. So the substation is further to the right. You'll see some of the housing associated with the subdivision. Sorry, with the substation there, bottom right-hand corner of the slide. Quite a bit more housing's gone in since this was taken in 47. So, you know, the Bunnythorpe has always been a residential area. And it's just as popular now, more so than it was then. So, again, you can see Jack's Creek running through the middle of our property. It's the Mangoni at the top. Below is Jack's Creek. That means we're particularly worried by any changes to the Mangoni catchment, which might result from the freight hub. And it's not just flooding either, although in the last week, certainly that creek was very high and dirty. So it's a sluggish flow in the stream in summer encourages the growth of a variety of dubious coloured algae. No one has bothered to ask our opinion on what is proposed downstream to us. It's as if we don't exist for Kiwi Rail. To them, we're outside of their requirement. Now, that's by way of introduction, and I'd now like to move on to the substantive points of my submission. Essentially, I am fundamentally opposed to the Kiwi Rail proposal because this is one project packaged up as another. What we're actually considering here today is a regional development project approved by Cabinet with specific funding for a specific project at a specific site, rather than a requirement to expand Kiwi Rail's freight operations in Palmerston North. So in reality, we're looking at a $40 million provincial growth-funded land banking opportunity. But in theory, we're being asked to expend our energies on considering the effects of a $1.2 billion intermodal freight hub proposal, which may or may not happen decades into the future. My abiding concern is that the provincial growth funding is being used to support the notice of requirement, which in turn justifies Kiwi Rail's better business case for a freight hub. These are quite separate issues, I contend, but they've become bundled up together, even though Kiwi Rail practically has only $40 million of provincial growth funding to relocate its facilities from Tremaine Avenue, and no promise, especially from the Minister of Transport, of the vastly greater sums required from Vote Transport to develop and operate an intermodal hub. Next slide, please. So moving on to the issue of scope. Joe and I were first alerted to this question, that of Kiwi Rail's scope, by the results of a LGIMA, Local Government Official Information Meetings Act, request to the Palmerston North City Council. Next slide, please. I'll look into this in more detail, but really what kicked it off for us, and you will have seen this already, a copy of a letter from Mr. David Murphy at the Council to Olivia Paulson at Kiwi Rail that was attached to our Council's first minute to the committee about scope before the hearing started. Back, please. So the contents of that letter, and I'll return to this in a little more detail shortly, obviously then, next slide please, encouraged us to look...
Can I just read that?
Oh, sorry. Yes.
I see, yeah.
So at the second paragraph you'll see that Mr. Murphy mentions that you've also mentioned in the past that you have a legal opinion that supports the use of the designation for rail operations and supporting industrial development and warehousing space. And then he goes on to say, in the interests of managing the risks posed by other landowners and stakeholders, that's us, Bunnythorpe people, would you consider sharing this legal opinion with PNCC? Well, QBRL chose not to. So, still don't know exactly what that legal opinion was. That encouraged us to look afresh, of course, at the 2013 Gazette notice. Now, our council has covered that in tremendous detail with her submission and the actual idea of scope. We came to it having both worked in central and local government, so we're familiar enough with the mechanics of legislation. For my part, oh gosh, a decade ago, I even drafted and administered royal warrants and regulations for the Defence Force, so we used to have to deal with PCO on a regular basis. What you wrote is what you meant, to be honest. We became concerned that the issue of scope had been raised with the City Council by local landowners and stakeholders. We then became deeply concerned that a fundamental question regarding KiwiRail's operations, and in particular the freight hub proposal, hadn't been resolved to the satisfaction of the council before our council accepted the notice of requirement. This seemed to us to be an exceptionally poor process, both muddled and conflicted. We further concluded that what seemed to be really at issue at here, sorry, let me say that again, we further concluded that what really is at issue here is whether or not KiwiRail can use public money to compulsorily acquire land for non-utility or non-network purposes under the Public Works Act, 1981. Next slide, please. So that brought us to the issue of when does road freight become rail freight? Now on the right, that's clearly road freight. She's still on wheels. On the left, you're in front of a train holding a bulk of timber. That's clearly rail freight. So road freight on the right, rail freight on the left. And for us, it seemed to be that the grey area was somewhere in the middle. When does transferring from road to rail, this intermodal business, when does it become practically rail freight? So I disagree that a definition or distinction can be made on the basis of the economics of rail freight or the profitability of KiwiRail's operations. The economic viability or profitability of KiwiRail isn't the issue at this particular point. For me, the critical question is whether KiwiRail has the legal authority to designate the private land using requiring authority status under the RMA for the purposes of a large-scale development that includes many activities outside of the scope of that authority. Next slide, please. Which for me came down to identifying the line of responsibility. So, I mean, we've seen this plan quite a number of times in the last year or so, year and a half. Railways at the top, I can understand that. Railway facilities in the middle, I can understand that. Freight forward facilities at the bottom, much harder for me to come to grips with. Because I understand that freight forwarders contract to move freight and then subcontract that freight movement to railways as required. When does the road freight stop and rail freight start? You could, in theory, draw a line on that plan and say, that is road freight, that is rail freight. I don't contend this is an overly narrow interpretation of the Gazette notice. Instead, I contend that the line of responsibility reflected in freight forwarding arrangements is important in defining the limits of the scope of KiwiRail as a network utility operator, regardless of its future business aspirations. The line of responsibility is also reflected in KiwiRail's financial responsibility, which was raised in the evidence of Paul Thomas. What KiwiRail is actually funded to do. Next slide, please. So looking at a close-up of that plan, I say it should be possible to identify on this plan the demarcation line between freight forwarding and line haul operations. That's railway operations. To take main freight as an example, carrying freight on the road. If something were to happen to that freight while on the road, whose responsibility is it? That same truck takes the freight to a warehouse facility. If something happens to the freight, whose responsibility is it? The freight is moved within the warehouse. Again, who is responsible should something happen to it? The freight is moved from the warehouse to a siding. Whose responsibility? Whose vehicle, whose operation is being used to pick it up and transfer it over? And at which point does KiwiRail actually assume responsibility for the freight as a line operator? Put another way, that same line of responsibility surely also defines the land which KiwiRail can require as a utility and network operator, and equally what it can't. If it isn't KiwiRail's business, then surely the Public Works Act cannot apply. Neither can KiwiRail designate land on behalf of future third parties who may or may not relocate to the site. Mr. Thomas referred to KiwiRail's financial responsibility during his evidence. This is another means of defining what is KiwiRail's core business, what is KiwiRail authorised and funded by the government to do, and equally what sits beyond its scope as a network operator. KiwiRail can't have it both ways as a requiring authority. It can't compulsorily acquire private land to develop non-utility or non-network activities, while at the same time conveniently excluding the North Island Main Trunk Line from the freight hub proposal. Either, to me, it's all or nothing. You can't actually sort of split it out like that. I'd also like to point out in passing the bleaching on this plan. If you look to find where the households are, where people currently live in and around the freight hub site, it's not easy to find. Households are often bleached out of much of KiwiRail's modelling, to the point that it's often difficult to find your own property. This should not be used to disguise the fact that living in these houses are real people, sitting on residential or rural land. We're not industrial. We're residential or rural. We don't wish to become industrial. Next slide. Hold that, please. Then just on the issue of approvals, I'll come to this again in a little more detail. Exactly what did Cabinet approve in principle in October 2018? Relocating from the 40-hectare Tremaine Avenue site to a 65-hectare site in 2018, that was approved by Cabinet. We're now talking about a 177-hectare site in 2020. This thing's grown. It's tripled in size. The business plan made repeated references to greenfield development, not where people live. Existing residential developments were effectively excluded from discussion of the proposed site. And I actually question if it was the intention of Minister Jones and the Cabinet in 2018 that, by approving KiwiRail's provincial growth fund application, they were A, effectively approving the dispossession of people from their homes and livelihoods, and B, approving KiwiRail to acquire land for purposes that could be outside of its legal scope as a requiring authority. Would the government really authorise one of its organisations to do something illegal? I'm also concerned about the precedent. Requirements combine some of the most powerful aspects of the Resource Management Act and Public Works Act. My concern here is the precedent which could be set, that a requiring authority can henceforth interpret that authority as it sees fit, without reference to Parliament or the courts, and can utilise public money to dispossess private landowners for commercial purposes. That cannot be what Parliament intended with the RMA in 1991, or what the Minister for the Environment intended with the Gazette notice in 2013 for KiwiRail, or what Cabinet intended when approving the proposal in principle in 2018. My final point here, well, actually, more correctly, the point made by Ms. Tancock last Tuesday, is that the scope of KiwiRail's powers as a requiring authority have been carefully and consistently prescribed over the past two decades. The wording of successive notices, Gazette notices, has been intentional and unambiguous, solidly based upon the relevant legislation, while also reflecting KiwiRail's roles and responsibilities as a network and utilities operator. Slide 12, please. So moving on from scope, I'd now like to consider another issue which was discussed on Tuesday, that is site selection and predetermination. Next slide, please. This is for our purposes, people on the street grappling with the RMA and Section 171. That was the point that we were looking at. The sections there highlight in red. These are what Joe and I were grappling with when we looked at the paperwork before us from KiwiRail. So the key point which I will develop next is that KiwiRail determined and indeed was specifically funded for the current Bunnythorpe site as early as 2018. I therefore question the authenticity and validity of the multi-criteria analysis and consultation which occurred after November 2018. After all, the provincial growth funding was for a specific project at a specific site. And this predetermined site is distinctly and uniquely identified in KiwiRail's application and approval by Cabinet for provincial growth funding in a number of ways. By name, and we'll see in the documents I'm putting up shortly, the Palmerston North Regional Economic Growth Hub, or the Bunnythorpe Multimodal Distribution Hub, or the Central North Island Regional Growth Hub. Also referred to by location, there's talk there of the Northeast Industrial Zone. Bunnythorpe is specifically mentioned. Then strategically placed land in the Central North Island, transport hub in or near Palmerston North, or outer area, outskirts of town, greenfield site. Also by locale, and this I think is very crucial from what my reading of everything, there are four key co-located facilities which underpin the viability of the freight hub proposal from 2018. And these are one, the Northeast Industrial Zone, two, the proposed freight ring road and its connection into the new Manawatu Highway, three, the North Island Main Trunk Line, and four, the Palmerston North Airport and freight facilities. The confluence of these four key elements of the freight hub proposal is distinct and unique. The confluence occurs at only one location in Palmerston North, and that is to the northeast of the city, towards Bunnythorpe. So I'm an historian by training, so that is what my PhD is in, and I'll therefore apply the methodologies of forensic history to the documents that I've been mentioning up to now, and which we've managed to obtain through LAGIMA and Official Information Act requests. Some of the documents have already been submitted to the panel, for instance by Danielle O'Keefe and Dwayne Butts, and by our own counsel. And the copies I'm going to look at are excised, redacted in the modern terminology. KiwiRail will hold the unexpurgated versions in their files, and in fact probably should have included these key documents in their bundle which was supplied to the panel. Now let me put them in chronological order. Slide 14, please. I'll look at these in greater detail.
Terms of your historical analysis,
yes.
What is the distinctive methodology of historical inquiry?
Getting to the nub of the issue, to be honest. Teasing out the common elements that actually trace a golden thread from beginning to end. So what I'm saying is, where is the accumulation of evidence and the consistencies that you can identify and the inconsistencies you can identify? So it's putting the evidence together. It's not just one document. It's layering them up and accumulating them and seeing if there is consistency, in this case, consistency over time. So it's a close analysis of the...
There's a famous jurist called Lord Sumption.
Yes.
Who is actually an historian by training, became a law lord. And he often said that historical inquiry was very useful for legal inquiry. So I'm sort of interested in
Thank you. I was going a little off topic, but John le Carré also said studying history is excellent training to be a spy. But it's teasing out the information and actually not looking just at the document beside you, in front of you, but also the supporting information as well. So don't take anything as gospel. Prove it, support it, tease it out, and then if at the end you come up with a different answer, that's the answer you've come up with. There we go. From 2018, so this is mid-2018, I'm looking at approval letters which were obtained by KiwiRail on the left from the Mayor of Palmerston North City. Our council submitted a copy of that on Tuesday. On the right is from the Chair of Horizons Regional Council. I have provided you with hard copies through Kath Oliver, if you want to have a look at these in more detail later.
Is there an electronic version available?
Yes, yes. Yes, there is. PDF available for both of those. And anything I've got off the internet, I've provided the electronic links too, so you'll be able to follow those back. But anyway, in 2018, KiwiRail proposed to relocate from Tremaine Avenue. We know that. It is evident that they met with the Palmerston North City Council and Horizons Regional Council in mid-2018. They proposed to relocate from Tremaine Ave. They had plans for an intermodal freight hub that actually identified a location for that hub to the northeast of Palmerston North, and they requested letters of support for a better business case from the councils. And letters of support were forthcoming from the Mayor of Palmerston North and the Chair of the Horizons Regional Council.
Next slide. Is there any significance in the fact that one is 2 years earlier than the other?
Pardon me?
Is there any significance in the fact that one's 2 years earlier than the other?
July 2018. Yes, there is quite a lot of significance. I've got that wrong. Let me just refer, therefore, to the Mayor's letter at the left, which is the one I was looking at. You're right. I got the date wrong on the right-hand letter. So the significance is you've caught me out. So let's moving right along. Let's have a look at what Mayor Smith had to say. That is vital. He points to note there. He's talking about the regional intermodal freight hub for Palmerston North. So already there's a locale identified. He talks about the city being well positioned to provide for the intermodal hub. And specifically in the wordings there, let me put my glasses back on the one, two, third paragraph down, he talks about we have greenfield industrial land in the location you have identified, and have capital programs and funding in place to provide infrastructure to support this intermodal hub and the co-location of industrial development, as well as roading infrastructure and air freight in this location. So I note here the specific references to zoned greenfields industrial land, to roading infrastructure and air freight, together with the co-location of industrial development. As I've said earlier, that confluence occurs uniquely in one part of Palmerston North. Next slide, please. In fact, we'll just move along from Rachel Kedwell's letter, which I thought was 2018, and move ahead to the better business case prepared by Kiwi Rail on the basis of their consultation with the councils here. Slide 18, please. There we go. And I'll come to this in more detail. But the executive summary sets out Kiwi Rail's rationale for a capital investment of $40 million for the acquisition of approximately 65 hectares of land in the northeast industrial zone. So the bits that have been blipped out we've managed to fill in from other documents. The question asked earlier in the hearing was the provincial growth funding site or project specific?
Sorry, I've been told off for not talking into the mic.
Oh, sorry.
That's right. So, carry on.
That's all right. So I was back referring back to the question that was asked, was the PGF funding site or project specific? Well, my answer here is most definitely site specific, and here's why. Next slide, please. Comments in here, and you have the full document in an electronic format, so I just want to point out the fact that there's a business case from the NZ Transport NZTA from Manawatu, Palmerston North Regional Ring Road, strategically positioned on the outer area of Palmerston North and connecting into Bunnythorpe within the northeast industrial zone. Now, that's describing the ring road, but it also is complementing the co-location of the freight hub. And I note here the use of the term outer area as shorthand for land to the northeast of Palmerston North. Next slide, please. Here too, from the business case, the term outskirts of town is being used as shorthand for land to the northeast of Palmerston North. Kiwi Rail specifically states here that acquiring land for a freight hub site in the northeast industrial zone enables Kiwi Rail to efficiently increase its capacity and secure its regional freight business. Further on this page, funding from the Provincial Growth Fund would enable Kiwi Rail to secure that land required to design and build a fully integrated greenfield regional growth hub. So design and to secure the land. And that's all they're wanting for their $40 million, but there's no mention of securing the funding to design and build the hub itself. That requires a lot more than $40 million. Next slide, please. Here we go. Funding from the Provincial Growth Fund would enable Kiwi Rail to acquire a site on the outer fringe of Palmerston North, removed from close proximity residential dwellings, and connected to a future ring road. So once again, the phrase outer fringe describes land to the northeast of Palmerston North, in proximity to the future ring road. They also talk about a new freight facility in the northeast industrial zone. Next slide, please. Mention here a greenfield site in the northeast industrial zone of approximately 65 hectares, suitable for a regional economic growth hub as estimated to cost. They've blipped that out, but we know it's now $40 million. $37 million of which was allocated for land acquisition. It's also noting here due diligence, designation, land acquisition would take between a year and a half to 3 years, 18 to 36 months to complete. That's the timetable Kiwi Rail is actually working to now, I believe. Next slide, please. The long-term vision of relocating Kiwi Rail to the northeast industrial zone has broader context than freight distribution alone. And then the comment there, by investing in Bunnythorpe. Very site-specific. I won't hammer the point too much, but in the next slide, talking about the northeast industrial zone land, Kiwi Rail, their rationale is the ability to relocate rail to the new industrial precinct in Bunnythorpe. And mention there of connecting to the planned Manawatu Palmerston North Regional Ring Road, while then location close to the city's airport, while surrounded by undeveloped green space. And there's an interesting thought there that their comment about relocating to the northeast industrial zone would mean that, unlike the current Palmerston North Freight Yard, operations would be less inhibited by residential surroundings on a greenfield site. They seem convinced that where they want to go is greenfields and nobody lives there. Land purchased will be held for rail purposes and be able to generate a holding income from leasing while master planning, layout and operating delivery mechanisms are established. I'd also say funded as well. And at this stage, the land in Bunnythorpe is largely undeveloped. Well, Bunnythorpe and its surrounds have been in development since 1880, for the last 140 years. Next slide, please. This is a map from their Better Business case. This shows where they want to put the freight hub. This is why they're applying for $40 million to buy land. Of the features that you can see on the map, the purple shape in the middle is the northeast industrial zone. That's where they're looking to go. And you can see here in close proximity the four facilities, which I have said, describe and delineate this freight hub proposal. The North Island Main Trunk Line, that's the black line to the right of the purple shape. There's the airport, which you can see to the bottom left of the plan. The proposed regional freight ring road, which is that line that runs from left to the centre of the plan. It actually says a regional freight ring road. That's actually Kairanga Bunnythorpe Road, where we live. And, any questions?
Just a point about that. All of that discussion around the northeast industrial zone land would make sense if the initial idea was 65 hectares, which is roughly one-third of the 172 or 177. And we're told that roughly one-third of the site is northeast industrial zone.
There it is. So you're correct, sir. There on the right is that's taken from the notice of requirement, so that's the footprint of the current freight hub.
Yeah.
Relocated in the same spot where they were looking to locate in 2018, only a little bigger. It's expanded northwards from their original proposed spot, but they've carried on northwards from there. They've expanded.
Well, I couldn't understand why people were referring in the early times to we've got the land in northeast industrial zone, but that may be when at that time they were thinking of a 65 hectare development.
And that is the approval they received from government.
Yeah.
That's the approval they're still working on, as far as I know. So there is the northeast industrial zone, and you can see it is still at the heart of the current plan that we're looking at. So it's still there. It's the beating heart, if you will, and then it's everything else is expanded beyond that. But that's the site. So there we go. There are 2 years separate the different plans. You've got August 2018 on the left, and you've got the notice of requirement plan on the right. Nothing really, to my mind, has changed from the initial plan to the final proposal. It's still the same site, co-located with the same facilities. That's been driving Kiwi Rail's business case from the outset. It's that convenience of being near the airport, the ring road, the North Island main trunk line, and the northeast industrial zone where land is available and freight forwarding facilities already exist. You can see on the left, you've got foodstuffs and you've got the people who are already operating there.
What's the size of the existing rail area?
At Tremaine Ave?
Yeah.
I believe it's about 40 hectares.
40 hectares. So initially they were looking at, say, a 50% increase on existing.
And you could see they'd take their facilities plus a little extra. And that also explains to me why they talk about greenfield sites, because they were never intending to go close to residential areas such as Bunnythorpe. Slide 27, please. Just on the business case, when they're talking about risks, they're setting out some risks to the $400 million land banking proposal. They're noting that they could miss the opportunity to secure the ideally located site in the northeast industrial zone at its lowest value. And they're looking to reduce the complexity and disruption likely to result from a later purchase. Also, the comment there on 5, that the risk is that the site could be purchased by another developer with alternative plans. It really is as though KiwiRail already considers itself a developer rather than a network operator. Just an interesting use of phraseology there. That's all I wish to point out on that particular slide. On the next slide, some of the points there I've been looking at. So they're only the KiwiRail property acquisition costs and preliminary master plan and designation costs have been estimated. This remains the case today. The practical discussions have only ever considered the $40 million of provincial growth funding. There's also mention here of advance engagement with landowners and an opportunity to negotiate for the land in advance of compulsory acquisition. So you might want to ask KiwiRail a little bit more about what their thoughts were initially, how they were going to go about acquiring their land in the northeast industrial zone, slightly beyond it. It seemed a far more inclusive approach at this point. Slide 8, please. Oh, actually, no, sorry. Back to slide 28. The other points I wanted to make, the principal features of the hub were established in 2018, from what we've seen. That the location was given as the northeast industrial zone, Bunnythorpe on the fringes of Palmerston North. That initially a 65-hectare greenfields location was proposed, consisting of undeveloped land removed from residential dwellings. The site was uniquely defined by its co-location with the northeast industrial zone, the North Island main trunk line, the proposed ring road, and the airport. The location was strongly influenced also by the Palmerston North City's strategy for industrial development to the northeast of Palmerston North. Next slide, please. So this went ahead to the Provincial Growth Fund. You've already seen this document from Danielle O'Keefe and Dwayne Butts. But I was a little confused when they made reference to a 65-hectare site. So I didn't have that information at that stage, yet couldn't confirm when they were asked whether there was specific mention of Bunnythorpe. Next slide, please. I actually realised we were using the different versions of the same document, and this is one of the joys of working with government and official information, that when they redact things, if you reapply, they'll redact different things. So the more you do it, the more information you can get. And it's interesting to see that initially Bunnythorpe was considered to be commercially confidential. Anyway, so you can see there it's a 65-hectare site, Bunnythorpe, Palmerston North, and it's a $40 million project. KiwiRail has the original of these documents without all the blacked-out sections. That's the next slide, please. More details of the application. Note here the specific mention again as a Bunnythorpe site. Its advantages and co-location with the northeast industrial zone, freight rail movements, planned roading infrastructure and air freight. That defines the site. Next slide, please. So Minister Shane Jones took the proposal to Cabinet in October 18. And here I note the proposal was sponsored by Jones, not the Minister of Transport. Next page, please. The Cabinet paper, I'll look at this in a little more detail on the next slide, but it again sets out the specifics of KiwiRail's application to the Provincial Growth Fund for their $40 million. Next slide, please. There we go. 87 and 90 are probably the most interesting paragraphs from that. The Bunnythorpe multimodal distribution hub involves the acquisition of land to the northeast of Palmerston North Funding is limited to the purchase of land and site planning. Ongoing operational costs are to be met through revenue. And I, that's Shane Jones, seek Cabinet approval in principle to allocate $40 million from the Provincial Growth Fund to the Bunnythorpe Multimodal Distribution Hub. And referring back to the question of scope, I note here Minister Jones's statement that rail and road hubs encourage co-location of industry and freight distribution. There's no mention here that KiwiRail alone and of itself will develop the full freight hub for this purpose. It's co-location as they're looking at. 636, thank you. So the recommendations to Cabinet made repeated use of the phrase multimodal distribution hub at Bunnythorpe, and there's no doubt that this is a specific project for a specific site with specific funding, and that this was approved in principle by Cabinet in October 18. The proposal went forward to the Regional Economic Development Ministers on the 5th of November. You can see here the Bunnythorpe Multimodal Distribution Hub is now the Palmerston North Regional Economic Growth Hub. It's the same thing. It's got a different name. Next slide, please. And the key points here are included the acquisition of 65 hectares in the North East Industrial Zone in Bunnythorpe, Palmerston North. They talk about securing that site in the North East Industrial Zone. They highlight the key location for New Zealand's rail freight in central New Zealand, supporting planned roading infrastructure in the area with its proximity to air freight and overall regional transport initiatives, and mention again the Bunnythorpe site. So that's approved by the Regional Economic Development Ministers on the 5th of November. And the announcement is then made on 10 days later. So Mayor Smith responded to it in a very positive form. But the announcement of the funding also marked, I contend, the beginning of the soft sell of the project, whereby the final site had yet to be decided and that an RMA process would be followed. For instance, Mayor Smith stating here that, quote, the exact location is yet to be determined. However, KiwiRail is considering options, including Palmerston North's northeast industrial zone near the rail line and airport. KiwiRail will be doing an options analysis as part of the resource consent process. Yet, his description of the integration of rail, road and air logistics and mention of the northeast industrial zone provided that precise identification of the site. And it's already been approved by Cabinet. Funding agreement. Now, this was discussed on Tuesday with our council. The funding agreement that started on the 16th of November 2018. If you remember, the duration of the funding agreement is up to 36 months for land acquisition. That's 3 years, which takes us up to November 2021, I think. So I don't know how long this funding agreement has yet to run. Slide 41, please. The Treasury document established a timeline, milestones and funding for the $40 million project. Well, I assume that's what it did. There's quite a bit redacted there for commercial information, but KiwiRail could probably provide the extra detail. Slide 42. So there was some discussion on Tuesday about the intent of the funding agreement and whether or not it was site-specific. On that note, on that point, I note that the funding, if you look at the top, was to be used for or applied towards, and I quote, the purposes of the project as set out in the key details. I've put those down below, point five from there. And as otherwise described in the business case accompanying KiwiRail's funding application to the Provincial Growth Fund, and that's the document we've already looked through. Next slide, please. Looking back to that better business case.
Can I just go back?
Yep, sorry, go back a slide. Yep.
Okay, I read that.
So 1.3. is from the general. I don't need to. All I just want to, of course, remind us is that the 2018 business case, August 2018 business case, explained the rationale for spending the $40 million, acquiring approximately 65 hectares of land, northeast industrial zone, so on and so forth. That was the site specific. By December 2018, there was no doubt about the location of the proposed freight hub. Craig Nash from Spearhead Manawatu understood the link between the regional freight ring road, that's not easy to say, the Manawatu Highway and the freight hub. Alan Piper of Kiwi Rail was even more specific. Look at this. He mentioned a location near the airport, in the northeast industrial zone, beside the main trunk line and the airport. He identified the site precisely. 45, please. At this juncture, Kiwi Rail had an opportunity to engage with the local community. That's us, Bunnythorpe. This is a regional development project, after all. The Better Business Plan and Cabinet paper appear predicated on collaborative engagement with landowners, taking note of concerns and sensitivities. Our community could have been invited to participate in the freight hub planning to help produce a concept which enhanced the local economy and the environment. That is what the Provincial Growth Fund was meant to achieve. Instead, Kiwi Rail's taken another path. They pursued the notice of requirement option, running the very real risk of using PGF funds for a purpose outside of the intent of either Cabinet or the fund itself, which is the compulsory acquisition of private land in pursuit of operational efficiencies. Next slide, please. But the public soft sell that the final site had yet to be determined was provided to the Manawatu District Council by Kiwi Rail in 2019, 9th of April. So the Kiwi Rail presentation included that comment that there'd not been any preliminary thought given to the location of the freight hub so as not to prejudice the process. No mention was made of the Kiwi Rail Better Business Case or the application to Cabinet for PGF funding tied to the Bunnythorpe site and based fundamentally on those unique attributes of the site with its location in close proximity to the railway line, airport and ring road. And nor was it made clear that there was only one site in the whole of Palmerston North or the Manawatu which met the parameters of the project approved for PGF funding. Next slide, please.
Just on that point where you say they pursued private land for operational efficiencies.
Yes.
That seems to suggest that...
That's my comment.
Yeah.
That's my comment, yes.
That you accept that the design achieves operational efficiencies.
Actually, no. I say that's Kiwi Rail is promoting that it can achieve operational efficiencies.
You don't concede that.
It's their proposal to do it for operational efficiencies. I wouldn't be the first, I'd be the last to sort of agree on that point. Mm-hmm. So the hard sell was restricted to key stakeholders, which didn't include the Manawatu District Council or, for that matter, the residents of Bunnythorpe. Kiwi Rail, Palmerston North City Council and the Transport Authority came together in June 2019 to conclude a memorandum of understanding to better coordinate the freight hub and ring road proposals supported by the City Council's strategic plans for industrial development to the northeast of Palmerston North and infrastructure planning. Next slide. Again, Bunnythorpe was not specifically mentioned. You have an electronic copy of this document in the package I've sent through, by the way. But the key characteristics of the site were all stated clearly: road, rail and air in combination with the northeast industrial zone. Interestingly, the MOU included a confidentiality clause. Even the contents and the existence of the MOU, even though it was in the paper, were to be kept confidential and secure. Those of us here in Bunnythorpe were, again, none the wiser as to what on earth was going on. Which leads me on to the multi-criteria, next slide please, analysis workshops from August through to November 2019. We've heard from the Kiwi Rail and Stantec planners, next slide please, how the workshops were organised to confirm the key elements of the Freight Hub Master Plan, site layout and identify the proposed site. This is from Kiwi Rail's NOR documentation on their discussion of the MCA process. Slide three. The next slide, please. I would have had faith in this process, had not the rationale, location and budget for the Freight Hub all been set out in the Better Business Case a year earlier, with a timetable and milestones for the project specified in the funding agreement from November 2018. What was different now was the scale of the thing. It had grown from 65 hectares. The framework for the workshops was based upon RMA processes, yet the fact that the process was entirely predicated on the provincial development-funded project for a specific site does not appear to have been disclosed. So what I'm saying on the left is the process followed through the MCA does match in part what was specified in the funding agreement. So there are milestones and boxes to be ticked, and that's what we see happening. Next slide, please. It's also difficult to have faith in this process, which followed on from the June 2019 Memorandum of Understanding between the three key participants in the workshops. After all, the first workshop was essentially a closed-shop affair between KiwiRail, Waka Kotahi and the PNCC. And of these, KiwiRail had received funding for the acquisition of the Bunnythorpe site through the PGF, while the City Council had been a strong supporter of the business case and application to the Provincial Growth Fund. I'll put my neck out here and say the phrase stacking the votes does come to mind. It's difficult to have confidence in the validity of this process, the MCA process, when the key components of the proposal, especially the location, had already been agreed to in principle by Cabinet a year earlier. And the analysis was being carried out by organisations which had already specified or supported the site for the PGF application the previous year. Nine sites, as you've heard, quickly became five. Why Tremaine Avenue was ever included is a mystery to me. After all, the business case in 2018 was predicated on moving from Tremaine Avenue with the active support of the City Council. The five options on the long list also included some non-starters. I consider these straw men. While Longburn to the south was located in an identified industrial zone and was close to the railway and proposed ring road route, or part of it, it wasn't close to the airport or the northeast industrial zone. So it's down to the south there. The twin sites at Tanui, up to the north, were located partly in the Manawatu District Council, away from the airport and the northeast industrial zone. Next slide, please. The short list of three equally included two non-starters. Tanui sits partly in the Manawatu District Council, not a party to that Memorandum of Understanding in June 2019. It's also distant from the airport and the northeast industrial zone. Bunnythorpe B, which is the one on the right, I think it is not in the northeast industrial zone. It's a bit further from the airport and sits underneath the flight path from the airport. It's only Site 3 which met all the criteria established in 2018. Within the northeast industrial zone, beside the main trunk line, close to the airport, and the proposed ring road, all four boxes are ticked. And only Site 3 matched in full the intent of the MOU concluded in June 2019.
So all of those options,
yes,
reflect the broad outline concept plan?
I believe so, yes, the broader outside concept plan, but not the funding agreement or the business plan or the Memorandum of Understanding,
no,
which sits in behind, yeah, all the parties coming
but
together.
But somewhere between the MOU, I'm not sure what that date was, 2000 and...
The MOU, 2019. Yeah, 2019.
Somewhere between 2019 and the date of this MCA.
Next month, the following month.
The following month. Has it gone from 65 hectares to 150?
It turns out it's about 140 at this point, and it comes out as 177, but the discussion of the MCA workshops, you know, there were various sizes. There was bigger discussed rather than smaller. You remember some of the areas concerned were much bigger than the site we're looking at now.
Right. I just can't recall that in my... It's fallen out of my memory, but you're saying that through those workshops, various sizes were discussed.
Various sizes were discussed, but the point I'd like to make is that different shapes weren't discussed. If you go back to the previous slide, it's the same design plonked on different sites along the North Island main trunk line through Palmerston North. Advance the slides, please. It's the same site. There is no difference. I would contend that if that actually genuinely wanted to look at different sites and different ways of laying out the site, there'd be different shapes. You'd actually have things set out differently. They could be wider, squatter, both sides of the track, accommodated to the terrain that you're looking at. But no, it's the same. It's the same thing. It's just flipped. Hmm. Bang, bang, bang. One size fits all. Site 3 fits best between Bunnythorpe and Foodstuffs, as always has. And I say in the middle there, that site design even matches some of the contours of the roading. Certainly sits along the main trunk line and runs parallel to as it cuts the road at the top and then...
They have slightly different designs in terms of the entrance and alignments.
Yes.
But the basic configuration is the same.
It's the same.
And in your historical inquiry, did you ascertain when that design emerged, because that was never going to fit into 65 hectares?
No. So, unfortunately, we're at the mercy of LOGIMA and the Official Information Act. The trouble is sometimes you even have to know what to ask for before you ask for it. So I would leave that to Kiwi Rail to fill in the gaps.
But doesn't the fact that it moves from 160 from 65 to 140 suggest that they did have to go through some process of assessment because it wasn't, as originally anticipated, going to fit within the northeast industrial zone?
Well, it baffles me that I see no evidence they've gone back to Cabinet for more funding.
Mm.
They're still trying to use their $40 million, which I assume they budgeted out for all the right reasons.
Yeah.
And yet the size of the site keeps growing. You're trying to do a lot more with the same pot. It just strikes me, just as someone on the street, as an odd. There's something missing in the discussion of how they got from here to here with the funding and the site location.
It just occurred to me that there seems to have been a development in thinking about what was required, and if that development and thinking occurred and you realised you could no longer locate the development exclusively within the northeast industrial zone, wouldn't you then look at how you were going to look closely at the options, because you've got a different ball game to deal with, you've got a designation process to deal with, you've got all of that. So in a sense, the development of the size of the design has forced them to look more closely at their options.
I certainly take your point, but as a former bureaucrat, what sits at the back of my mind is that the original plan has been approved by Cabinet. And to change what you're doing with the funding arrangements and everything else, you really need a revised Cabinet approval. It seems odd that they have the Cabinet approval, they're running with that, but they're changing what they've been authorised to do, shall we say, because they're moving beyond the industrial zone and land zoned industrial to move into rural and residential zones and move beyond what they said to Cabinet was a greenfield site. Undeveloped greenfield site with residential development quite a distance away, right up to our village.
But that's not your point, because it's not our job to. That the Crown's big enough to look after itself, and if it had a complaint about that, that's something between it and that. Your point is a different point, which is that they came to the analysis with a view.
Yes. They came to the analysis with a business case, approved by the government, supported by the local authority and Waka Kotahi. And it's the co-location of those four things which makes the freight hub to the northeast of Palmerston North, with the airport, trunk line, ring road, northeast industrial zone and those existing freight facilities.
Mm.
That's what makes it the ideal site. Mm. That's what makes it optimal. It's that confluence of those four things which doesn't occur anywhere else. So they can look at other sites, by all means.
But I'm sorry, am I allowed to
say?
I think is what you're actually saying, Sarah, is that actually the fact that they've made it bigger and different than what they originally applied for means that that's when they decided they needed to have a multi-criteria assessment, and therefore it's not the same as predetermined site because it could no longer be the predetermined site. Is that what you're trying to say?
No, I'm not trying to say that. I'm trying to say I understood the proposition to be that the business case very much determined the location because it was predicated on a Bunnythorpe location. And therefore, the MCA was always a charade. It never had an authentic MCA. But if KiwiRail thought at the start we're getting funding to just buy land in North East Industrial Zone and we're doing 65 hectares, the level of effect would have been modest because it fell within the contemplated use. Once they went to 140 hectares or thereabouts, they realised they were in the category of significant adverse effect, potentially significant adverse effect. And the significance of that is that that's when the adequacy of consideration comes in. If you buy land zoned for an industrial purpose and own it, and it's confined within that land, I don't think there would be much basis to argue with it that it had a significant environmental effect because the zone authorises that sort of industrial activity. Once they had made a proposal of a higher order of magnitude, the obligation to do an MCA was triggered. And logically, they would have been looking for a site that had the best means of being consented. In other words, that would be their incentive because they've confronted the potential of a significant adverse effect. So I'm just saying that what that history points to me is that there is one set of assumptions until 2018 about from the central government about what this is going to look like. And by 2019, it's a different beast in size. Yes. And then an MCA is carried out.
Yes, my concern, abiding concern, is, of course, the Cabinet approval and the funding agreement with Treasury, which we were looking at on Tuesday, which are fairly watertight documents, and now changed. So they're funded for one site to do a job.
Yeah, but doesn't that work against your proposition? Because
I don't see how. If you've got $40 million and you're looking at the North East Industrial Zone and it's a greenfield site and it's away from the effects are minimised because it's far from residential areas, then you come up with a triple the size. It's not the same business case that you put to.
But that's my point.
It's a different beast.
So your logic is the business case led to the predetermination.
Yes.
But you're also saying they didn't follow the business case, so they weren't predetermined.
Well, in fact, all right, I can take your point that the MCA process might have been triggered, to say I'm not an RMA expert by any means. However, I also worry that the participants in that workshop who are already committed by various means to developing on that site anyway, be it the North East Industrial Zone, be it the Ring Road, or be it the North Island Main Trunk Line, they come together in a multi-criteria analysis workshop situation with a lot of these preconditions coming into the room. That concerns me. It just gives me pause to reflect and think, well, what actually happened here? And I'm not saying that the consultants who came in were of that mind, but what information were they given and what information could they base their work on? And actually, when it comes to it from my original submission, how did they come up with Site 3 and abandon some of the others when Site 3 has some of the most expensive challenges when it comes to earthworks, when it comes to stormwater and flooding, and it comes to the location or the proximity of residences? It seems that there were other, you know, they've sort of accepted the site or settled on that site despite some of the fatal flaws or some of the problems that exist on that site and don't exist elsewhere. It gives me pause for concern, that's all, and I can't take it any further than that.
No, but in terms of... that's fine. I just wanted to put to you what seemed to me a contradiction arising from that history, the logic of the analysis. But you did say that this optimization of the fact, the confluence of four factors, what's the problem with inclining to a preference because of those factors? What's the objection you have to that? If those factors were relevant factors promoting that location, they just are factors.
Well, the fact for me is that the factors we're talking about, so they only occur on the one site. The whole idea of making Kiwi Rail move freight most efficiently of all, with the assistance of freight forwarding companies and getting everything co-located. You come into a multi-criteria analysis workshop situation, you have a memorandum of understanding about working together on the features that you want to bring together on a particular site. I mean, and those things are sort of, you bring those into the room. That's where my unease sits, so that while the way the actual workshops run looks perfectly fine, and I'm sure it's very sincere, I don't doubt the sincerity of the process that was followed, but the assumptions that are brought into those rooms, the funding package that's brought into that room, the contract that's brought in, the funding agreement, the cabinet approval, I don't see any of that mentioned through the documentation for the MCA. I don't see that any of the people in that room were already said, well, actually, you know, we're already funded for this. We have a memorandum of agreement between these guys, and these guys sitting in the room that we're going to work together on this sort of thing anyway. You can see what I mean? This is why I'm sort of thinking... I'm going to hand over to Jo as well. It just needs to be more transparent.
I guess the thing is, I totally understand that there would be... a preferred site that's got what you want. I guess the thing that gives us disquiet is how genuine was the consideration of alternatives when you actually have decided on a perfect site. The whole case is based on a perfect site. You've funded it, you've got an agreement, and then you go and look at other sites that don't fit the parameters of your case, your business case. I guess the thing is the order is very strange, and that's what we're disquieted by. And that was not told to Bunnythorpe residents either. So that's our argument, that there's a difference between having a preferred site and having a predetermined, agreed site. That's the point we're making. It concerns us.
And the other thing that's just coming
up... I think... I understand that, but the way the Section 171 is structured... The MCA is not necessarily a site selection methodology. What the Act requires you to do is to say, are there alternatives and have you adequately considered them in light of the effects?
And I suppose what we're kind of saying is, were there genuine alternatives?
Right.
And what?
But I guess the significance of the way in which it's worded in the statute is it doesn't make any sense, that provision, unless there is already a preference for one site.
It isn't a preference, it's a decision. Our point is the decision
has already been made for that site.
Right. So your proposition is there is already a decision.
Yes. To what extent could they actually genuinely vary their decision if they'd suddenly found a site that was absolutely superb somewhere else, but they were funded for this particular site? To what extent could they actually change their decision. Without, I think there's a difference between a preference and a pre-decision, I guess, is what we're trying to say here. It does raise questions, especially when those were not told to the residents of Bunnythorpe at the public meetings.
So your proposition is there has been no adequate consideration of alternative sites because there was predetermination.
Yes. Correct.
Yeah. I do think there's a real question there to ask.
And in fact, I'm just reminded on slide 53 that I've put up that the extract from the funding agreement from November 2018 did include a necessity to carry out a multi-criteria analysis of options. That was by a completion date. I've just brought that back up onto the screen.
And how do you reconcile that proposition with the proposition that you're advancing that they are not following the funding agreement?
Well, that they are talking about completion date and milestones. There's a process to be followed. It is in accordance with the standard template that we got from the PGF fund. I don't know the details. You'd need to ask Treasury on this and how they put the actual funding agreement together. But it does strike me as odd that you have a funding agreement which is specifically linked to the business case where you've got the 65 hectares at Bunnythorpe, and they still talk about you need to go through and do this multi-criteria analysis of options and selection of preferred sites. So you follow the process, but you're still back to where you began because you've got the money, you've got the site, you've put the business case together. Yeah. So that's, yeah, that's, this is the...
Yeah, I mean, it's you summarised historical inquiry as the golden thread. And that's why I'm looking for a continuity of process that's almost uninterrupted, mm-hmm. and you can draw it. What I see is quite interrupted pieces of evidence, but no golden thread.
My golden thread remains the co-location of the key sites which make the Bunnythorpe hub viable. That's consistent all the way through.
But those co-locations that you rely on are not things manufactured by the people who did the MCA analysis. They are existential facts. In other words, there is an airport there. There is a potential ring road. There is an airport. It was the airport, the ring road, and what was the
main
other
trunk
one?
Main trunk line.
Main trunk line. So they all are there. They are existential facts. Mm-hmm. There's nothing. You can't criticise someone's process because they acknowledge existential facts.
No, I guess what we're saying is how could any other, because the other locations did not have those. They do not have the pre-existing requirements. What was the value of looking at those apart from, you know, well, I don't want to say apart from straw men, but, you know, why if none of them had the requirements, why were we looking at them? Why would they consider them when already they simply did not have the requirements because they'd predetermined what they needed and they'd already been funded for that need?
Okay. So if you think of that provision as an accountability provision, what the record shows is a rational exposition of why those sites were discounted. And your proposition is, well, they are sort of like straw men arguments.
And I guess we have to move there.
I'm not sure how further we can take that apart from just as...
No, well, I'm just... I think there's been a lot of... as you pointed out, Mr. Butson, I can't remember his wife's
Dwayne
name.
And
Danielle O'Keefe. And you have both taken us quite deeply into these background things to suggest that that provision has not been met, and I feel duty bound to find out the depth of that and understand it. That's my purpose. It's just to try and test it, and that's what this process is about.
In fact, just a little further on, I had some questions which I'd appreciate if the panel would put back to KiwiRail on this process. There are some questions I have which I'm unable to answer.
Yes. I'm just conscious that we normally break at 11 for morning tea.
That's okay. That's okay.
So why don't we have just 15 minutes break? I apologise, fellow commissioners who I can't see on the screen, for all these interruptions. But I'm actually quite interested in the background. So thank you.
Thank you.